Okay, a brand new episode of V8 Radio. I'm Kevin Ostie, of course, joined as always by my co-host and cohort, Mr. Mike Cueball Clark. What's happening, Mike?
How's everybody doing?
Everybody over here, being me, is doing fine. How are you?
I'm perfect. Couldn't be better.
Right on.
It's good to be back on the air.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a little while, and a lot has happened towards the end of the year. Man, between the SEMA show in November and the Muscle Car Corvette Nationals, and then the PRI show in Indy last week, or 2 weeks ago, whatever the heck it was, and then got to get an update from you on the GTO, and man, lots going on.
Yeah. Speaking of that PRI show, what is you know what? I've never seen much on that. Is that like a mini kind of like a mini SEMA or a giant SEMA kind of a show, or just like another aftermarket trade show?
Yeah, basically PRI stands for the Performance Racing Industry Show. So, whereas when you go to Las Vegas for the SEMA show, you have booths that are jammed with show cars and booths that are displays that are, you know, 100 feet by 100 feet with 30 or 40 people and all kinds of elaborate displays. When you go to the PRI show, it's pistons and clutches and high performance parts that is everything from the weekend racer to pro stock to top fuel and beyond. You know, F1. You name it, the stuff is there. So it is a it's a great show. It's actually owned by SEMA now. The past few years, a couple of years ago, they acquired it. And it's and it's in Indianapolis at the convention center there, right downtown Indy. So Indy's a great town. It's a great place to go. It's nice, good place to eat and drink and hang out. And it's another industry reunion kind of thing. And there's it's big enough to where there's so much stuff that it's really hard to see everything. You can spend a lot of time going up and down the aisles and talking to people and seeing stuff. Those who are there on a mission can really get some stuff done because it's not as showy and as fancy as the SEMA show.
I gotcha.
These are racers, so they don't mess around.
Yeah, it's kind of down to the nitty gritty. What do you got? Show me this. Is this going to work for my application, right?
Well, yeah, and again, it is an industry show, so a lot of it is planning out racing sponsorships, and there's a lot of announcements based on rule book changes for, you know, different sanctioning bodies, and you have some awards banquets for different, you know, racing organizations, and it's cool. If you're a racer, it's a place to be. And for us, it's another chance to interact with a lot of the manufacturers that we deal with on a daily basis, and things that aren't necessarily racing-based as well. I mean, I got to spend a bunch of time with Rick Love from Vintage Air and Kyle Tucker from Detroit Speed, and DSE is obviously very into racing, but you don't really think of Vintage Air when you think race cars, but that gives you an idea of how important and how wide, you know, the spectrum is as well. So yeah, PRI is it's a great show.
That sounds cool. I got to check that out someday. You got to take me as your guest. I'll be your helper guy out there.
Yeah, hey, put you to work.
If
we both go, at least you'll be working.
God dang it.
Yeah.
Oh boy. You've been putting out some form updates on that 66 7-liter Galaxy. That thing is really looking great.
Yeah, thank you. The crew just, again, did a bang-up job on that car. A little bit off the mark from what we typically do because it's very, very stock. The only thing that, the car is finished now. There's two pieces of trim that we're still waiting to get back from a plater that were missing when the car came in. But the only thing that isn't stock on it are the plug wires and the distributor and the carburetor. But everything else, stem to stern, hubcaps, pinstripe white, 15-inch tires, everything else on it. And it's cool because it was a cool car to start with. So, it is very cool in its original stock element. And the color's insane. And so we're metering out the story on that one. There's lots going on in the shop, and it obviously takes some time to be able to cultivate all the photographs and write those stories. I love doing it. It's just a matter of getting some of the time. And when we build a car for a customer, we have the photo galleries online as well, which is, you know, a main way that we communicate what's going on with the customer's car. So the photo galleries are much more current than the forum threads. But the forum threads are nice because they're interactive and people can post comments and stuff.
Right.
It's not just looking at pictures.
Yeah, I would imagine that building a car for a customer that needs to be stock, I would imagine that puts a unique challenge to make it stock, to get the stock stuff. Because if you're building like a Pro Tourer or something like a Resto Mod, I mean, you have probably a lot more a lot more flexibility when it comes to building these things. But when you're building a stock 7-liter Galaxy, you got to find stock 7-liter Galaxy parts. Like, you got to try to find those Lexan headlight covers, and you got to, you know, find the right, get the right interior in there and get the right dashboard in there and do everything, you know, like Ford did it from the assembly line. That's got to be a lot more challenging than building a Resto Mod. Not to make light of building that, but getting the stock stuff down has got to be kind of tough, especially on a car that's not really ubiquitous like a 66 Galaxy is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and look at you throwing in the headlight covers.
How about that, right?
Like a Ford guy. That's good.
Booyah. Well, my buddy Robert's a Ford guy. He has a 66 convertible, and he's been coveting those Lexan covers, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think those are actually Pyrex.
You're right, not Lexan, they're Pyrex.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well,
they're real glass.
Real glass, yeah. And from what I understand, those only came on the 427 cars, or if you specially ordered them. And this car is a 428, and they were not there, which is actually a good thing, because you're right, finding those. Last time I saw a set for sale, they were like $2,000 a piece, I think, for those headlight covers. So,
well,
yeah,
there,
you know,
there's
chasing out those original parts has been the biggest challenge of building that car, because there are things that are not reproduced and there are things that were exclusive to that car and a fairly limited production car, you know, they all disappeared a long time ago. So like the grill is unique to that car and some of the trim. And of course the 428 is kind of unique, and the tubing that goes on the intake manifold for the PCV system and the vacuum piping and all that stuff is specific to that car in a lot of ways. So, yeah, and a lot of people say, well, you know, it's easy, just take it apart, paint it, and put it back together. But when the stuff is missing, and the guy brings you the car in buckets, you know, which kind of happened here.
The stuff you do have, it's deteriorated beyond repair, and it's no good anyway.
Right, and there's always budgetary constraints about, you know, how much is going to be put in this car, and is it cheaper to find a replacement part, and you're gambling there, you know, because you might. One thing on that particular car is the armrest bases, right? So these were plastic plated, armrest bases when they were new. And of course, the plating's long gone, and then they deteriorated on top of that. Sure. So we've purchased numerous sets of these things that have come in. And what you buy, you know, it looks great on eBay or whatever the pictures the seller sends you. And then you open the package and you get an envelope full of dust, you know. So it's part of the deal, unfortunately. So we're lucky that the big items, the grill, the wheels are specific. They're a 15 by 5.5 inch wide wheel, which is a weird one.
That is a weird one.
Yeah, and they all have a KH for Kelsey Hayes stamped in them, so they're kind of cool. And the hubcaps are fairly specific on that car. But I'll tell you what was neat about it was a very rusty car when it came in, and you could see that in the forum photos. And we recreated the frame in 5 sections. Where we had to replace big spans of the frame. But one thing that we didn't really even touch was the seats. And the original upholstery is beautiful. It's unbelievable to me that it survived. And we had we've got a detail shop that we deal with quite a bit, and we said, hey, can you do anything with these? You know, before we were planning on reupholstering them all, but he worked his magic on them, and next thing you know, we have a set of seats that are not ripped, not worn out, and they are they're worn in. You know, so they have it's like a comfortable pair of shoes. You know, so they don't look like they're brand new and overstuffed. You know, like you see sometimes from an upholstery shop. So that was a score because you know, that would have been a big deal to recreate all that stuff. Those covers are available, but still, if you don't have to go through it, you know, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, that is kind of nice. Save the customer quite a bit of money too, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and then the other part of it is the discipline of putting everything where it belongs and making everything look the way it was supposed to. And we were fairly faithful to this car. We were not 100%. So what I mean by that is, you know, if this was an L88 Corvette or something that was, you know, a $300,000 or $400,000 car, you owe it to the car to be as dead nuts accurate and correct as possible. In this case, this car isn't in that level, and the customer didn't really want to take it there. So we don't have chalk marks and overspray on things, and we didn't grease pencil up on the firewall the markings that were there, and some of the coatings are, you know, not exactly the way they were. The colors are right, but the color is actually more vibrant than it was back in 66 because it's today's technology paint. It's not, you know, kind of a lacquer, fairly flat-looking color. So,
you got a two-stage on there now. It probably shimmers real nice. It's probably gorgeous. I'd love to see that thing in person, too.
Yeah, and the sun, it's crazy. It looks really, really killer. But, you know, there's a lot of times when you say, yeah, I'm going to hide this wire over here and clean this engine bay up. And you go, hell no, you're not really supposed to do that, you know.
Yeah, that's not how they did it at the factory, my friend.
That's right.
That's incorrect.
Yes. And our exhaust is a little bit different, too. And I think it looks killer, though, the way the tips come out in the back. And if anybody has a problem with it, you know, the owner's happy, so I'm happy.
Is it recently you put out a top 10 list on your muscle car of the week, and it was a pretty interesting list. I was shocked that it wasn't Pontiac from top to bottom.
I knew you were going to say something like that, but there was Pontiacs there, so there, you know, you were representing.
But what shocked me was no Chevrolets at all.
None. And you know, the theory there, and the disclaimer, is that I didn't pick these cars. This isn't something that I just said these are my top favorites, although, you know, of course, my favorite Buick did make it in.
It did.
But it was a completely unbiased and yet 100% unscientific way of gathering the top 10. And we just went by our YouTube channels between VATV and Muscle Car of the Week and exported all the play counts and put them in a spreadsheet and had it do the math, and it said, well, these are the top 10 from those two channels that got the most plays, so that's our top 10. And it's unscientific because we publish those videos in other places. You know, they're not necessarily just on YouTube. The Facebook ones don't contribute to that play count because they're hosted somewhere else, and there's a whole bunch of other forums and websites and things. And there's a whole bunch of companies that are aggregating our videos, by the way, where they will, it's okay to do because it's the internet, you know, but they'll pull them from YouTube and they'll be, you know, there's a muscle car site in Germany and there's one in Russia that just love our stuff, which is pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So you're worldwide, G, worldwide. I like it.
Yeah, bad and nationwide, I guess. Bad or just bad. But, yeah, it was a good list. The one that surprised me was the number two slot being the GTE 427 Cougar.
Yes, that was a shocker to me as well. I mean, number one, you don't even think of a Cougar as a muscle car. But, I mean, that one was pretty slick, but still.
Yeah,
I mean, that many views to be number two.
Well, the only way I can explain it is there is so much content for Chevrolet fans that when a Cougar guy sees a video online of a pinnacle car, they tell everybody they know. So all the Cougar fans have seen that video.
That makes sense.
Which is great. And that's how it rocketed up to be number two. You know, another one that's been really popular, it didn't make the top 10 this time, but that Supercharged Avanti that we did has been an insanely popular video. And I think all the Avanti fans in the world have seen that video, you know. And
yeah.
Proportionally, there's not that many of them compared to, you know, Chevelle fans, but it's just neat that you get the saturation. In fact, that particular video is on one of the Studebaker Registry homepages. It's like Studebaker Central, and they put that video up there, which I thought was killer because they could have very easily, you know, barbecued me for getting something wrong in that video. But it's just such a solid car, and we got most of it right, so they were kind enough to include it. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Avanti, too. That is such a polarizing style. You either love that Avanti or it makes you want to vomit by looking at it. I mean, maybe not that bad, but still, it's a love or hate kind of car.
the Avanti, I guess.
You know. Yeah, the Avanti. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, I mean, but I think that car is largely misunderstood for what it is. Being fiberglass, being disc brakes, being, you know, a lot of advanced technology for the day, to me it's interesting to see how a smaller money company pulled all that stuff off, and it wasn't done by GM or Ford or Chrysler. So it is weird, I'll give you that, but it's weird only because it's not so common to us. And, you know, most people don't get a chance to spend time with a real one.
True.
Having had that opportunity to sit in that car and look at it up close, it's like, wow, these guys were really thinking. You know, they were really trying to push the envelope when they built this car. So it was cool.
Yeah, I knew a guy that had an Avanti a long time ago, and I got to drive it around a little while, you know, a couple times. And it was kind of a neat car, a good driving car.
Yeah.
The interior was pretty wild with all the, you know, little knobs and switches. And, I mean, it almost had like a kit car kind of feel to it. But it was an interesting car. I mean, like I said, it drove well and it had good power and it stopped well and steered well for what it was. So
yeah,
no complaints about it.
All that switchgear was very aircraft inspired, you know. So it's got these long sliding levers, you know.
Exactly.
And that kit car feel that you're talking about is, in my opinion, purely because that body's all fiberglass. And it doesn't, the doors don't close the way, you know, a Chevelle does. But it definitely feels like a Corvette from the way, you know, the touch points are when you grab the handle and close the door. It's got that same glass, you know, kind of sound to it.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a neat car.
Yeah. And the Muscle Car of the Week, they shared a nice collection of supercharged Studebakers out there as well. That was a nice collection there. I really enjoyed seeing those.
Oh yeah, at the McCacken show, the Muscle Car and Corvette Dance. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that was ridiculous. That whole show, you know, we talk about it all the time about how great that show is. This year, believe it or not, our media coverage on it is going to be a little bit different, a little more of a narrative tour of the event. So we're still editing all this stuff and putting it together because we, you know, we try to present this as nice as possible every time we do it.
Sure.
But there was so much going on there that in all reality, I'm not sure I remember everything that happened.
Yeah. Well, you were running around like a chicken with your head cut off with all the unveilings you were doing in the Bobby Unser interview and all that stuff. I mean, you were not idle, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm very fortunate to have not to be idle, you know, to be involved with all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the way a lot of that went down, I mean, normally we go there, we interview people, we shoot video. Sometimes we have a car, you know, or whatnot. But they like to do the unveilings. And what we're learning is that you're starting to see cars out in the world that are being portrayed as a Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals unveiling car from 2010. You know, this is a status element now. You know, if you can say, you know, and we'll just say, you know, next year when you bring your GTO and we'll unveil it there, you know, you'll be able to say, you know, that your GTO is unveiled at the McCacken show, and it's only the elite cars that have that opportunity to be unveiled there. So, it's neat that they put significance on that. It's just not pulling the covers off cars. I mean, these are
right.
These are real deal cars. And one of the coolest things there is that some of these cars were displayed unrestored a year ago or 2 years ago. And then at this event, they pulled the cover off and now it's fresh and restored and like new. So there's kind
cool.
of a circle of life there. There's all kinds of thought in that show. And that's what makes it so great. You know, it's not just a bunch of cars in a room. They plan the stuff out and they think, you know, what will really, you know, push every aspect of this thing over the top, you know, and that's just one more way that they were able to do it.
Yeah. Well, it definitely shows. I mean, those guys at Bob Ashton and company, they do. I mean, it's ridiculous. All the thought they put into that and the organization and getting and the themes they put together and finding all these cars, you know, spread out across the country to come together for one show. It's just unreal. I mean, I can't stress it enough. I mean, it just blows me away how he just keeps edging it up every year. I mean, from all the Hemi Cuda, the was 71 Hemi Cuda convertibles and the Boss 429 Mustangs and even all these Studebakers, supercharged Studebakers. I mean, my gosh. I mean, all the feelers this guy has to have out all over the place.
Well,
to get all this, it's unreal.
It's definitely reaching a terminal velocity to the point where people are approaching them and everybody wants to help, you know. So when the committee that kind of puts that together, they start talking about a theme display and the word goes out. It goes out to the right people who know the people, you know, and then all of a sudden it comes together. It's certainly a ton of work. But at least it's not an uphill battle, especially
right.
because they've got such a great track record of pulling this thing off that, you know, last time I talked to Bob, he was telling me how now they've got, you know, multitudes of ideas for the theme displays coming in from people all over the world saying, well, you need to do this, you know, and it's like the problem is they're all such great ideas. So, you know, at least for him, he's got years of content planned out.
Yeah.
To keep
it's a good problem to have too much information.
Yeah, it really is. And this year, they had so many of these cars that were getting unveiled that they have Dennis Pitzenbarger do the hosting on all that stuff. And there was just so many of them that Bob's like, hey, you know, do you mind? Can you help us out and pull the cover on a few of these things? And, you know, of course, I jumped at the opportunity. But it's funny, here I am talking about how much thought they put into this. I was kind of a last-minute addition to that. And
is that right?
I looked at my phone. I was getting ready to do one of these things, and I saw that Facebook has this ability to live stream now, so I click go, and I just handed the phone to a guy standing there for the first one. I'm like, can you just point this over here? and there it was. So, you know, I'm tarnishing.
I happen to see one of those. I'm like, I'll be damned.
Yeah, right. So here's Bob and the members of the organization that are putting all this long-term thought in, and I'm doing stuff instantly just saying, yeah, I'll try this, you know, whatever.
Yeah, let's just throw this out there, see if it sticks.
Let me see if I can bring this event down a few notches for you.
Careful, it's low res.
Yeah, it was. And it was funny because the one guy, it was great. We were doing an unveiling of this Charger that was in the sunroof invitational display. And you know, here's something that nobody would have thought of. Let's do a muscle car collection of cars that had factory installed sunroofs, right? Sunroofs were something that you and I looked at and steered away from, you know, whenever you see a sunroof car. But now when you go back and go, you know what, that is pretty cool that these things, you know, survived and that they had this stuff.
Yeah.
So this guy and his family restored this car, and his buddy is standing there, and we do the unveiling, and I hand him my phone, and he's shooting the thing. And Kelly had texted in during that recording something from something from the shop, because she was actually working, putting our Duramax truck back together. So,
right.
Yeah. So this poor guy is shooting this event, and all of a sudden the screen flips around and goes dead for a second, and he's reading the text, and the phone camera switched to him. So you get his face right in the middle of the video. He's got this,
that's awesome.
He's got this look on his face like, what the heck is going on, right? So, and then he pulled out of it, he flipped the camera back around, and we finished the deal. Well, unfortunately, on Facebook, it got shared all over the place, and his friends are beating him up. They're like, hey, yeah, you jerk, you did a selfie right in the middle of it. You know, what are you doing? So, it was pretty funny.
That's beautiful. Oh, boy. Yeah, speaking of Duramax, you You had that thing just all torn apart a couple weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I got to correct you. I did not have that thing torn apart.
No, no, not you.
No,
Kelly, someone with a pretty heavy foot.
Well, yeah, Kelly and the crew had it torn apart. Trevor and Tyler and Emma and some of the other guys had bit parts in that project, and it was really. It's kind of interesting, actually, because it's an 06 Duramax. It's our tow vehicle that we use, and Kelly drives it, you know, basically every day. And I think at 150,000 miles, the story was, we were talking about that 66 Galaxy a few minutes ago. Ben, our camera guy, and I were shooting some photos of that Galaxy down the street from our shop in this abandoned building. And Kelly noticed that the truck was running weird and it was leaking coolant. So she pops the hood, and it had been sitting there for quite a while, but apparently it was still hot, right? So she cracked open the cap on the radiator expansion can, and it blew the cap straight up in the air. I think it hit her in the head. It bounced off under the hood, sprayed coolant all over the place. So she got hosed with this stuff. And
oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. So what does she do? You know, spends an hour looking for the cap and ends up walking. Luckily, there's a hospital that's like two blocks from our shop, but she ends up walking to the hospital and sends me a text that says, "How's the shoot going?"
Oh, good God.
Yeah. So I'm just down the street and we're taking our pictures and everything's going great. And I hear back from her later on that she's in the hospital getting, you know, coolant flushed out of her eyes because this thing let go. And I'm like, why didn't you say something? And she's like, I'm fine. You know, it'll be all right. I'm fine.
Good Lord.
Yeah, she's tough. So luckily nothing bad happened. She didn't get burned. She didn't lose vision or drink a bunch of coolant and all that kind of stuff. So,
thank God for that.
Yes, but she was more concerned with how come there was so much pressure in the overfill can. And it turns out that, unfortunately, it lost the head gasket, so it was just pushing compression into that cooling system.
Yeah.
So we did some research, and the most effective and efficient way to do the head gaskets on a Duramax truck like that is to pull the cab off. So the whole thing came apart, cab's up in the air on the rack. You got frame rails, a bed, and a motor, and then our guys and her all jumped on it and tore it down. And you know, those jobs to me, they're kind of interesting, but I'm always the guy that breaks like every single plastic connector.
Oh, sure.
You know, and wiring.
I'm that guy too.
Yeah. And luckily Trevor and Tyler and Kelly, they're all very handy. So they had minimal collateral damage and they got the whole thing torn down. Mm-hmm. And we sent the cylinder heads out and just treated it like a regular car basically. And the heads got cleaned. They checked out straight. There's no warpage. We reloaded it with some ARP studs instead of regular head bolts, and some better gaskets and stuff. So,
try to Kelly proof that thing then, eh?
Yeah, I was giving her a hard time, you know, because she definitely likes the turbo, you know. Boost is addictive, so she's being very nice to the truck now, and it seems very happy, and it'll go many, many more miles. So that's all good. But what a job!
I would imagine that's a pretty daunting task. If you didn't do what you did, and didn't have the shop, I would imagine it would be a pretty daunting task to remove that cab.
Yeah,
and do all that.
It'd still be a part, you know, at this point.
Yeah. If it were me, I don't know what the heck I'd be doing.
Number
one, I don't have a lift or anything, and I have to, you know, try to, you know, get a bunch of buddies to help me and, okay, guys, let's get this done.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
And when the pizza and beer is gone and it's disassembled and they all leave, you know,
exactly.
That's about when I walked in on it, when it was all blown apart. And I'm looking at this thing as like, you know, about the second most expensive thing I ever bought, and it's scattered all over the shop.
gives you a feeling in the pit of your stomach, doesn't it? Oh, brother.
Well, only because I
got faith in you guys, but God dang it.
Yeah,
this is
scary. I wasn't they were very reassuring, and Trevor and Tyler and Kelly, you know, they're very smart with the way they take things apart, and everything was, you know, bagged and tagged and labeled, and they had the manuals and they had the phones and pictures and all that stuff. And it was a quick turnaround. It was basically just a couple of weekends worth of work. So it wasn't like it sat that way for 6 months. Then you go back and say, what the heck was this? You know, and things don't go back together. So those guys are far more competent than I. So the proof is that, you know, we drove it tonight, you know, so it rocks.
Very good. Very good, man.
So earlier in our season, you know, the mission was to drive the poor GTO before the snow fell. And unfortunately, you've already shoveled this year, right?
Yes, I have a couple times.
And there was a couple hang-ups, you know, getting some parts. And the sidebar is that we're actually going to publish a bonus episode of V8 Radio because Mike and my longtime friend Paul and I had kind of a side conversation that we recorded at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals.
Yeah.
And it kind of dawned on me that it was basically the three of us just hanging around and BSing about our own stuff. Which is kind of what you and I do anyway, but we'll make that kind of a bonus episode.
All right, very good.
And you did give us kind of an update there, but the last I heard, I think you were going to go visit the machine shop and see kind of where things landed and how are things going.
Yeah, well, I haven't been able to get out there since we talked last at McCacken. Like I said, I did go out there the one time, and he wasn't sure if he got the right pistons from the manufacturer, and he was supposed to remeasure the block, and I kind of been putting it in the back of my mind, and I haven't called him back to figure out what he's figured out. So I'm still at a big standstill. I have no new news, unfortunately.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. So I mean, I've been off the road for, gosh, going on 2 years now, so I guess I can wait a little longer.
Well, no new news is also no bad news, so.
That's true, true. I mean, some people, cars off the road 30 years before they finally get it together. I'm praying that that doesn't happen to me. Like, I'll probably be too old to pick up a wrench by then, but need to do it sooner rather than later, that's for certain.
Yeah, and again, that's a common thing, and I have no, you know, I pass no judgment on anybody with the speed of their restoration or their project because there's just so much stuff to do. I mean, my own cars I have in the garage here, my 70 Buick, luckily it doesn't really need anything. But I noticed, you know, just the other day, our 62 Ford Galaxy has been in the family since 93. And it's a blink of an eye. I remember, you know, having this thought process in my head. Yeah, I want to update a few things on this. And that was like 12 years ago, you know, and it's still, I haven't touched it. We've driven it, you know, here and there, you know, as much as I can. But I'm kind of gearing up to, you know, wanting to take the plunge to crack into that thing. But my biggest fear is kind of where you're at, where it's like, well, what happens if everything else happens or it gets might as well syndrome? And, you know, I don't want to have this thing go into an all-out frame-off just because I started on it, you know, trying to keep the lid on the pot in some way, but it ain't easy.
That's tough because that lid wants to pop right off.
Well, yeah, and we're going to be doing a VATV episode, as a matter of fact, on how to avoid and or manage might-as-well syndrome. You know, so how do you approach a project and accomplish what you want to accomplish without letting it go off the rails just because you have the opportunity to do more than you thought, because the ramifications are anything more you're going to do is going to add money and time. So,
yeah, I mean, and you got to be really disciplined in that respect. That's hard.
Well, I think you just got to be happy with getting those immediate tasks accomplished. You know, like in your case, of course, you probably would love to blow it off the frame and repaint it and do everything new, you know, but at the same time.
Oh, God, I would love to.
But at the same time, I think you're of the mindset where you're going to be pretty darn happy just driving it again. So,
yeah,
you know.
I am, absolutely. I mean, I have, you know, big visions of what I want this car to be eventually. And, but for now, I'll be happy to have an engine back in it. It's something that doesn't leak, a transmission that doesn't leak, that shifts well, that drives well. That'll really, really hold me over for quite some time. I know it will, but there's always still that vision in the back of my head where, you know, gosh, I would love to mini tub it and put, you know, like 335-inch tires in the back and, you know, and get the stance just right and get some really wide front tires and really make this thing lower down and, you know, turn a corner real nice and put some better seats in it and get fuel injection for it. And, you know, the list goes on and on. But for now, I'll be happy just being able to drive the damn thing.
Well, yeah, because they're no fun when you can't go around any corners with them, you know, and it's a bunch of boxes. And I think
it's turned into a giant shelf right now, for Pete's sake.
Maybe it's the older I get, but I'm appreciating more and more that if it's together or, you know, you start to weigh the returns, and it's like, if this thing is perfect, am I going to get that much more enjoyment out of it than it is if it's pretty decent and I can enjoy it now, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm coming around to your way of thinking on that. That's for sure.
But at the same time, I'm the plumber with the leaky pipes. You know, we've got this killer restoration shop, and I got these cars that people are like, yeah, when are you going to restore that one? You know, that thing's a pile. I don't put them in shows. You know, I don't use them as calling cards for our business because they're not done by the level of our shop, mm-hmm. you know, and we're fortunate right. enough to have customer cars that, you know, we're working on and not. You know, sometimes shop owners have the ability to run their own cars through and then, you know, sell them or whatever. We don't.
Right.
We have a different model, so everything in the shop is a customer car, and it's far more important than getting my stuff done. But
how are things going over at that shop?
The shop's going great. There's a lot of cool projects. We've got a 73 Duster in the shop that just came in.
That's, I was going to make mention that I was perusing through the V8 TV show website and I saw that 73 Duster, saw some pictures of it. That thing looks really sweet. I love it.
Yeah. It's a great color. It's a 340 car.
You know,
so it's the right combination, a very enthusiastic owner who's owned it for a long time. And he did the driveline on it many years ago, and unfortunately the car kind of had to sit, and the body shell deteriorated, and things got a little bit rough around the edges. So he sent it to us to do, the Classic Industries truck has showed up several times already with quarter panels and trunk floor sections and a lot of metal work. So we'll be showing a lot of that process either on the show or on the site somewhere. We're just going to end up kind of cleaning up the engine and giving it a freshen up and a tune up and everything, and hopefully get that thing back on the road.
Cool. Yeah, that's something I'm definitely going to keeping an eye on. I got a soft spot for this car. I had a 74 Duster when I was in high school.
Mm.
And I love them. I love Dusters for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Got a real soft spot for them.
And a lot of people.
And you had
do.
That. You had a Scamp too, right?
Yes, I had the 75 Plymouth Scamp. You know, the Darts uglier sister, I guess.
Right.
And mine was a slant six, though. I mean, it was a single throat carburetor slant six pile. Mm-hmm. But we had a ton of fun in that car too, you know, and it's very similar to this Duster. The dash is similar and that same feel, so same platform basically. It got me looking a lot more at what would be the pinnacle of that car would be like a 70 Demon 340 car, you know.
Yes.
Or even some of the big block ones that you never find, but they're neat. And we've got a 68 GTX in the shop, too, right now, which is a very cool car.
It's a
440 six-pack car. It's an automatic, and it's wearing a medium turquoise color with black buckets. And it's a correct-appearing car, but the engine has a bunch of secrets because it certainly does not sound like a stock 68 440 by any stretch.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's hiding... It's hiding cylinder heads and a different cam and up compression and some cool stuff. So this one, I'll have to put the picture on the site. At one point, this car had a mobile home on top of it. It was...
Get out of here.
Yeah, I don't know if it was...
How does that work?
A high windstorm or something, but a mobile home got tipped over on top of this car, and there's a picture of it. The owner sent me a picture of this thing. So...
Oh, my gosh.
It got restored after that, and enough time has gone by to where some things are starting to leak, the window's leaking, and you know, he's starting to come to terms that, you know, maybe he wants this thing tuned up a little bit. So right now we're doing a little bit of maintenance on the car, possibly with a nod in the future if he's happy and if he wants to maybe go through the whole car at some point. But as it stands right now, it's very presentable. It's something I would drive every day. I mean, it is killer. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at it right now. It's a pretty tough-looking motor scooter.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's a great color.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love the white stripe. It looks really great with the paint.
Yeah, it's a great design. It's got everything it's supposed to have, and it's one of those things where, you know, when that one's sitting out in front of the shop, you know, you can almost hear all the people skidding out in front as they rubberneck trying to check it out. We've had people that literally have stopped and come in the shop saying, you know, I saw a Mopar over here the other day. I need to go see it. Where is it? You know, and they come in and check it out. So that's cool.
That is cool. Yeah, I'm also looking at a shot. You got a really nice looking El Camino, 59 El Camino with a really interesting tonneau cover on it.
Yeah, the owner calls that one El Cadio because it's a 59 El Camino, but it's powered by a 500-inch Cadillac, and the tonneau on the back is all steel, and whoever built the car the first time made a steel tonneau using a 59 Impala deck lid and just stretched it forward.
That's killer.
It is killer. It looks like it was made that way. I mean, it looks like it belongs.
Yeah, it does. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It looks totally factory.
And it's steel, baby, because when you pick that sucker up, you know, it's hinged, and it takes everything you got to get in there, and that's one of the things that we might be doing with the car. Unfortunately, the customer put it together, and it's got a fast EFI system on it and vintage air, and it had a fire. It had an engine fire, some fuel fitting let go, so they kind of boxed it up and brought it over, and they said, you know, can you help me just get the thing back on the road? So we went through the fuel injection. We went through the ignition system. We got his AC charged up and all that stuff. It's got a gear vendor overdrive on a Turbo 400, which is killer. So it is made to drive.
Yeah, sure. What kind of rear end ratio is on there, do you know?
I don't know what the gear set is, to be honest with you. But I think with the amount of torque that Cadillac makes, you know, you don't need... It's like a diesel. You don't need to spin that engine over $3,000.
Right.
It's done at like 3,500. Right. So hopefully with the gear vendor, it'll always be in a power band and just sail down the highway.
Very cool. Very cool. Man, lots of good stuff over there. I love it.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. It's cool that, I don't know if you saw that picture of that 72 Bronco that came in, the black one.
72, which one?
It's a 72 Ford Bronco, and it's...
I
love those things, man. They are so cool.
They are really cool.
And you know what sucks is, you know... Here's me being a curmudgeon, but you know, a lot of the hipsters are getting into these alternative off-road vehicles, you know, and mall crawling and you know, never getting them dirty or anything. And that's not what this one's all about. I mean, this owner is very enthusiastic about this car, and he just bought it and sent it to our shop to have it kind of looked at, you know, before he starts driving the thing all the time. So we did a carburetor rebuild on it. We're fixing a couple minor details, but it's sweet. It's a Ford 302 with a five-speed manual in it. So,
man, that thing is short looking too. That's a short wheelbase on that bad Oscar.
You ever driven one of those?
I have not, unfortunately. I'd love to.
The wheelbase gets shorter the faster you go, I'm telling you.
Oh, I believe it.
we worked on an orange one a couple years ago with bigger tires than this one, you know, just some mud tires on it. I don't remember what the heck they were size-wise, but this thing would just bounce down the road and front to back, you know. It was crazy. And I said, I don't know if I...
That's got to be a little unnerving.
Yeah, I'm more of a high-speed cruiser kind of guy on the highway. And I was like, I gotta bring this down a few notches because this is a little unnerving.
Yes.
But it was cool.
Absolutely. It does look pretty cool. I bet it's a hell of a lot of fun off-road.
Yes, yes. And this one, I haven't driven this, but the customer definitely wants to... You know, it's the zombie apocalypse car. There's no electronics in it.
Yeah.
It's a carburetor and points, so it doesn't matter what happens, it'll go, and it'll go through or over anything. You know, it's got a huge winch on it, a big, you know, custom push bar, and it's trick. Yeah, so luckily, like I said, we're very busy. We got, you know, a lot of stuff going on, which is great. Lots of cool projects, lots of very talented people that are putting in the time and making these cars, you know, making them top shelf, and hopefully in 17 there's some rumblings of some there's always talk of you know, customers that call us and want certain things, and you know, the really over the top cars take a long time to put together as far as the plan, you know, to get them nailed down and in the shop, and right now we've got a customer that we've worked with before. He's a great guy, and he's got a 57 Nomad that we're going to be working on, and yeah, it's going to be cool. It's a color, it's red right now, it's a beautiful car. It's got a 383 and air conditioning, and you know, the charcoal and black interior, all stock.
Sure.
But we're talking about doing a color change, and we have an LSA supercharged 6.2 V8 and a 6-speed manual for it already. And you know, we're to the point right now where we're discussing how are we doing all the details as far as the finishes, and how much of the wiring are we hiding, and, you know, are we fabricating a bunch of stuff, or are we just going to package the new parts in it? We're going to upgrade the brakes and suspension, and you know, because when you're putting close to 600 horsepower in a car like that, it's got to be able to steer and stop, you know, not like 57. So that one is in the discussion stage right now. It's been in our shop a couple times already as we, you know, evaluate and kind of figure out what the plan is. But hopefully we get to start on building that one pretty soon, and that'll be one to follow. It's going to be a great car.
Sounds great. Sounds like it'll be good for everything. Boy, it'd be a fun power tour car, sounds like.
Yeah, and that's kind of the goal, you know, just something you can turn the key and go anywhere and be comfortable and bring all your stuff. You know, it's a wagon.
Love wagons.
It's funny because I wasn't kidding. McCacken was such a blur. I'm looking forward to finishing up the video coverage on this because I get to see what happened.
Yeah, really. Well, I tell you what, I when Paul and I, we were watching your interview with Bobby Unser, that guy can have a talk with you. By golly, he's a chatty Cathy.
He was awesome.
And the stories coming out of him are unbelievable.
Unbelievable is the right term for him, because he is of that generation and of the mindset that it doesn't matter what you needed to do, you just did it. You just figured out a way to do it and do it. And one of the stories that he tells, so I was fortunate enough, we had previewed this before, the 69 Torino that was his Pike's Peak race car in 69. It's in the Brothers collection, and they brought the car out for the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals and brought Unser out. And I was expecting, you know, 10 minutes with Unser to learn about the car a little bit. And what we ended up getting was, you know, we got that 10 minutes by the car, but then there was an hour-long seminar, basically, where Unser and I were basically on stage. And I got to ask him a couple of questions and sit back and let him go for over an hour and tell stories.
Yeah.
And
that's an easy interview, isn't it?
It was an interview. I mean, I was a passenger on that ride like everybody else. I mean, he just goes from one topic to the next and vividly recalls details of that particular car and about racing and about anything you want. You know, and he's one of these guys. He was buddies with Smokey Unick back in the day. And is also a pilot and a racer and a, you know, a life champion, as I'll call it. He's got books out on how to be successful in anything you do. He's one of those guys that knows how to win. And my biggest takeaway from that was when he said, and again, this will all be in video and in audio because it's over an hour long and I want to air the whole thing. I mean, I just want to let it go. There's nothing you want to take out of this. But one of the topics was, how do you be a winner? You know, and he said, it's simple. He said, you just figure out what you're going to do and you hang around with the best. You just get the best. You know, if you need a chassis guy, you get the best guy. You need an engine guy, you get the best guy. And if everybody does what they're supposed to do, and they're all the best at it, and you get to be pretty good at it yourself, you'll win. And it's oversimplified, but that's what he did with that 69 Torino Pikes Peak car, because the chassis was built by Bill Stropp and those guys. So they were the best chassis builders at the time. The engine was built by Smokey Yunick. He was still one of the best engine builders, even though the guy's been, you know, gone for almost two decades. And Unser as the driver, you know, one of the best drivers, you put the best in the same project and, you know, how can you fail? So I every day when I show up at the shop, I look around and Kelly, you know, has had a tremendous amount to do with you know, helping to find the right people to do the right stuff on the cars. And I think it's great that we're able to have mechanics who are at the top of their game and fabricators who are at the top of their game and you know, painters and even the prepper people and the support staff and everything else. And it's like, yeah, you're going to make good stuff. You're going to make great stuff because you put the right people in place and let them do their thing. So
get the best people and by golly, you'll win.
Yeah. You know, and it's the hard part is actually making that happen. But, you know, when you look at the Bulls dynasty, you know, as I was living in Chicago throughout that whole thing, sure, Jordan was the greatest player ever, but he also surrounded himself with people that were phenomenal in their own right and then demanded, you know, 110% from everybody all the time. And look what happens. You win six championships.
Yeah. My gosh, the guy's never lost a championship.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right, so...
Doesn't know what that's like.
Yeah, and then Unser was also just funny. Just a funny, you know, funny kind of old guy. I don't know if you heard the story about him taking his pilot's license. But he was talking about how he taught himself how to fly because he needed to buy a plane to get to his races. He didn't have a lot of money, didn't have a lot of time. So he thought it'd be easier and quicker to fly around the country in a single-engine plane. And he flew for a long time without a license. And he said, yeah, well, you know, the way I look at it, he was afraid of heights and afraid of flying, but overcame both of those to make this happen because he had the desire and he needed to get, you know, this done. So he's like, of course, you know, I knew that if I took the pilot's license test that they would make me go into a vertical stall and stall the plane and it would fall out of the sky and point towards the ground and, you know, I'd have to come out of that. And, well, that would scare the heck out of me, so why would I do that? So I just flew without a license.
It's so easy.
Makes sense, you know. Here you go.
Yeah, perfect sense. Sure, yeah. I took flying lessons about 20 years ago, and, you know, even with instruction, the first time I soloed, I was literally shaking and petrified. I can't imagine just getting in there without any training and say, yeah, I'll just fly this thing to a race. That's crazy.
Well, I mean I'm sure there was a lot of you know, stepping stones before he just got in and flew to a race, but
I hope so.
Yeah, but you know, again, he's a brilliant guy who understands machinery and understood how flying happened. But I didn't know you soloed. Did you ever get the license, or did you just go through the training, or
no,
how far did you go?
I got about 22 hours in. This was in the mid-90s, like 96, 97.
Really?
Yeah. It was a customer of mine knew a guy that had a flight school out at the Morris Airport in Morris, Illinois, and kept kind of on me, hey, did you call this guy yet? You know, get a lesson and, you know, start flying. Because he knew I liked flying just because from my time in the Air Force, I loved flying. And so I finally got a hold of this guy and I took a lesson. And it was a hell of a lot of fun. I'm like, ooh, we're going to go through this. And I soloed after 11 hours and then just did a lot of solo work and a lot of pattern work. And it was uncontrolled airspace, so you just kind of watched out for the other guy and just kind of did your thing. It was a heck of a lot of fun.
That is awesome.
So, yeah, I'd love to take it up again too. Once my kids are a little older, and you know, some of my responsibilities aren't quite as heavy, I'll maybe try to fly again a little bit. But it's a good time. You should do it.
Does any of that carry over any of your prior training?
Prior what from?
From your previous training, do you start off at 0 hours, start fresh, because it's been...
I would probably have to do some refresher flying, and they would look at my logbook, I'm sure, and just see how proficient I can get back into it. Because they wanted me to solo at 6 hours, and I kind of took a break a little... I took like a few months off, and I came back, and so... You know, I flew again with the instructor for a few more hours, and at 11 hours, they said, okay, I think you're ready to solo. So,
wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I was shaking like a leaf, but I managed not to crash the plane. So I got that going for me.
Yeah, well, you know, any landing you walk away from.
yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it was a good time. I'd love to take it up again.
That's fantastic. I've always thought that that was something that I would really enjoy doing. Thrilling, scary, fun, you know, cerebral.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Yeah. What was real fun is my instructor had an aerobatic plane called a Super Decathlon. It was a single engine, high performance aircraft.
I used to fly one in a flight simulator program as a kid.
Did you? Well, he had one of those, and he took me up in there, and he let me do some stunts and some aerobatic flying. And I'll tell you what, my man, that is a kick in the butt. Doing loops and power spins and rolls and all kinds of hammerheads and kind of inverted.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah, that would be something else. Yeah, it's funny because as a kid, I wasn't really into that kind of stuff. And then the older I get, the more I dig roller coasters and the more I dig kind of being out of control a little bit. So I think that would be fun.
It would be. I bet you'd love it.
Yeah. So. Sure, now you got me thinking about that.
That's right, man. Think about it, because you got nothing but time on your hands. Yeah, so right, do it.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, guys, I'll be out flying today. All right. Well, listen, my man, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time catching up. And you have a tremendous holiday season. And hopefully, you know, I don't know when our next update's going to be, but maybe there's a few words from the machinist about screwing that motor back together.
Yeah, maybe. I definitely got to give him a call, for sure. You got me thinking about this again, though. I kind of had it in the back of my mind. Now it's starting to get to the front burner again. I got to
see what happens.
Make something happen. Yep. Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. Hey, don't worry about it. You know, my 70 Riv, I've had a head unit radio installed in the dash with no speakers for now 4 months, you know, because I haven't gotten that far yet. So I'm just as bad.
Yeah. That's cool. No worries. No judgments. No judgments.
Not at all. All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of, you know, Classic Car Slacker Radio with us.
Indeed.
I got all the superstars at our shop that make us look great at the V8 Speed and Resto shop and, you know, my own stuff again. So, all right, man. Well, it was a pleasure, and we will talk to you next time. On V8 Radio.